15. Shadows stretched out and filled in all the space on either side of the road. 2 hours after leaving the town, the dark sky rose up ahead and came crashing down like a wave, leaving a foam of stars above them. Eleanor's headlights cast a bright oval on the road ahead of them as they raced along. Eli remembered his astronomy professor telling a story about Albert Einstein and headlights, but couldn't recall the point of it. Harry cleared her throat.
The Founding Fathers were very forward thinkers, she said, her voice falling back into the practiced cadence. They left ways to change the Constitution because they knew ideas change or fade away altogether. What's dangerous now can be harmless in a few generations, and vice versa. When they created the dream, they understood just how powerful it was. They knew how dangerous its ability to change the country could be in the wrong hands. So they petitioned Ptah to make guardians for it.
Petitioned?
It's how the stories come down the chain. You're interrupting again.
Sorry.
Supposedly Franklin had General Washington ask his best men for volunteers. Dozens offered their lives, but only 5 of them were found to be worthy.
Eli opened his mouth, but a glare from Harry cut through the dark and killed any words in his throat.
These 5 became the first of the faceless men. Their identity, their features, it was all stripped away. All they have is their duty to protect the dream.
Okay. Wait, she sighed.
Honestly, Mr. Teague.
You're saying they're not wearing some special mask or cloaking field or something? Like a mask under the plastic mask? They actually don't have faces. No eyes or nose or mouth. She nodded.
So how do they talk? Or eat? Or breathe?
Nobody knows.
So how do they see?
As I explained before, certainty.
Yeah.
But what does that mean?
It means they have absolute certainty of what's around them and what they're doing.
How, though?
Nobody knows.
Eli sighed and slumped back on the Model A's bench seat.
What little we do know,
said Harry,
comes from one of the greatest searchers, a man named Abraham Porter. He tested their range, learned how far their certainty reached.
How'd he do that?
He used a sniper rifle.
Oh?
Abraham is one of the very few searchers to ever kill a faceless man. Turns out they're only certain of things within 300 or 400 feet of themselves.
He killed one of them?
He killed 8 of them altogether.
Eli whistled. Then he straightened up on the bench. Wait, you said there were 5 of these... of them?
The first 5,
she nodded.
Since then, they've recruited soldiers and agents from across history. The Civil War, both World Wars, Korea, Operation Desert Strike, the One-Day War of 2029.
Jesus, how many of them are there?
There are dozens now, maybe hundreds. Time flows differently around the dream. I've heard stories that one of the original faceless men is still alive and over 1,000 years old because of all his time on the road.
Wait, he said. The dream's protected by dozens of these guys?
At the least.
All like the one that showed up at my job? Like in Pasadena, that tough, that strong?
Yes.
Are they all that strong and bulletproof?
They're not actually bulletproof.
They're wearing vests?
No, they just...
Her fingers tap-tap-tapped the steering wheel and the rhythm tickled the edges of Eli's brain.
You've perhaps heard stories,
said Harry,
where people are shot, but the round strikes at just the perfect angle, in just the perfect place, and they survive with minimal injury. It bounces off a bone without so much as breaking the skin?
I think so, yeah. She nodded.
That's what the faceless men do. Certainty allows them to know just how to stand or move themselves to be in that perfect position where the round will cause the least amount of injury.
So, they're bulletproof.
No,
said Harry.
Abraham proved that. It just takes a great deal of work to stop one.
And they're guarding the dream?
They were, yes.
Eli shook his head. How the hell did someone get past a few dozen of those guys to steal something? Hell, how'd they get past them and then back out of
wherever it was.
Nobody knows.
Do you know who took it? She glanced at him and shrugged. There's a lot of nobody knows to this.
Truer words, Mr. Teague. Truer words.
Eli sighed. The headlights of the Model A hit the glossy surface of a roadside billboard, turning it into a white rectangle. They drove past, and he blinked away the glare in time to glimpse All New Stardust Casino in curling letters on the sign.
The faceless man who first came to talk to me, who followed me to Boston. He had a badge.
They do,
Harry said. I think he used it to hypnotize the crowd in Boston.
Like most badges, it's a symbol of power. It allows the bearer to ignore some rules and laws.
How?
Just having the badge makes them less noticeable. If it's out, they can influence what people see, how they perceive things. It's why people usually don't notice the masks or the lack of features.
And you know this because...
Abraham, again. When he killed one, he tried taking its badge, experimenting a bit. It worked for a while, but once they realized he had it, they could, I don't know, see around it, ignore it?
She yawned.
He tossed it in a trash can in Times Square on V-Day.
Why do they wear the masks, then, if the badge can make people ignore them?
Once again...
Wait, let me guess. No idea.
One thing we do know,
she said,
through hard experience, is that they were fanatical about protecting the dream. Franklin, Monroe, Jefferson, and the other founding fathers, even they weren't allowed in its presence again once it was created. They all knew it'd be too tempting for them.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely, Eli said with an absent nod.
Harry tapped her nose twice.
Protecting it was the faceless men's only reason for existing. When the dream was stolen, it was their greatest possible failure. They became zealots, obsessed with getting it back.
Okay, said Eli. But that's good, right? I mean, if this thing's the foundation of the country, then it can't be a good thing that it's gone.
Not at all.
So if they want it back, well, why are you even getting in the way?
She shook her head.
We're not. I said they were fanatical about protecting the dream. Their priorities have shifted.
Shifted how?
Harry twitched on the bench. She rolled her shoulders, and with her grip on the wheel, it swung her body forward and back.
They searched for the dream for 100 years,
she said,
through almost 300 years of American history. And somewhere in there, amidst all those rumors and stories and sightings of faceless men, the first searchers found out about the dream, too.
Okay.
Some of the searchers are not, shall we say, as cautious as others. They see the travel itself as a means to an end, manipulating events to serve their own needs.
But isn't that, Eli tapped his knee, isn't that just making more ripples like you were talking about before?
Exactly,
she said with a sage nod.
Some of them are more devious, but the searchers who make extreme changes are hunted down by the faceless men as well.
Okay, so they guard the dream and they guard the timeline?
History,
she corrected.
Right. But I still don't get what the deal is. If you're not messing things up in history, and you all want the dream found, then why aren't you?
They stopped looking for the dream,
she said, shooting another glance at him.
That's what I've been trying to explain to you. After 100 years of being unable to find the dream, they...
She paused to clear her throat.
They decided to focus more on the protecting history aspect of their duty. And they decided that anyone traveling through history was a risk.
Even if you're not doing anything?
Precisely.
Well, why keep doing it then?
Because someone has to find the dream, Mr. Teague. How long can a house stand without a foundation beneath it? Even in your era, you must be able to see the unity of the nation coming apart.
I guess. Yeah.
When the dream is found, the country's underlying bedrock will be restored.
And you'll get your 3 wishes or whatever.
Someone's going to affect the shape the country takes. Yes. Would you rather it be someone like me or some greedy little weasel?
He shook his head.
This is
Nuts.
And yet, still the truth.
As you were told it.
Yes, there is that.
Eli watched the endless night roll by, then focused his gaze on the bright space the headlights formed ahead of them.
It almost makes sense, he said. In a weird sort of way. I mean, once you get past the fact it's nuts, a lot of it does sort of line up.
It does.
Still, I think I'll leave that part out when I tell people where I've been for the past week.
He sighed. I guess I'll be leaving most of this out. In the dark, her face shifted. He saw the movement.
What?
You won't be able to tell anyone.
Well, I have to tell them something, he said.
He shook his head and pictured the questions from Robin and Corey, from his mom, from Bill at the bank as he begged for his job back.
I've been gone over a week. People are going to ask questions.
The tip of Harry's hat shifted back and forth in the dark.
I thought you understood,
she murmured, half to him and half to the road.
Understood what?
Her fingers drummed on the steering wheel, the same half-familiar rhythm.
You'd already caught their attention. They'd taken note of you because you'd spoken with me twice before. But once they saw us together in Pasadena, once they saw us leave together.
Something twisted low in Eli's belly. Not quite nausea, not exactly a tightening.
What are you saying?
I'm not just answering your questions, Mr. Teague. I'm trying to teach you. You need to know all this if you're going to survive on the road.
No, he said. No, I don't. I'm not on the road. I just want to go home.
I'm so sorry,
she said.
You can't. When I said I was stuck with you, I didn't mean for the short term. They're after you now, too.